The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 393, recorded on July 27th, 2015. Welcome to the 293rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 226th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Scott Durbin.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, and this week includes a gaming flashback. Paul's not here. He's sick. He doesn't say what he's sick of, but he's in bed, and he's just unable to do the podcast, so it'll just be two people.
I hope he gets better soon, then.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we do not have any listener feedback because whatever friends Scott has didn't really care about the episode. So I blame Scott and his friends for not writing in. And also for the other regular listeners who don't write in, like Arthur V and other people. Maybe if I say their name, they'll be forced to write in. Like, you know,
maybe.
If I accuse them, you know. Actually, I accused Dan because Dan said he would write in and he didn't write in, so I'm disappointed. And for those of you, Dan Clark, who used to be a host on this podcast as well. He didn't write in, so I blame him most of all, actually.
Posted on Facebook, I tweeted, I told him in Skype.
You were doing a practical joke.
I don't know. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, you know?
Yeah. Anyways, we do have a gaming flashback this week. I'm not sure we did this gaming flashback ever. It's an old arcade game, and, you know, I actually played it. So, this week's gaming flashback is Pepper 2. Pepper 2 is an arcade game programmed by Exidy and published in 1982. And despite its name, there was no predecessor named Pepper or Pepper 1, which I always found hilarious. How do you name a game Pepper 2 without there being a Pepper 1? Maybe they wanted to make people think that it was important, like, yes, we have a Pepper 2! We didn't have a Pepper 1.
I think it's like Lead to Shoot Larry 5. There's no Lead to Shoot Larry 4. They just went to 5.
But there was a 1, 2, and 3. See, that's the thing. There is no Pepper 2. The game featured an unlicensed version of the theme to Alfred Hitchcock Presents when gameplay started, which is da da ba da 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 da. Da, 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 da. And I remember this because it always played. It was a little earworm, although it's not as blatant as Vanguard. You ever play Vanguard?
I don't think so.
So here's the thing. When you play Vanguard, the arcade game, when the game starts, it plays Star Trek the Motion Picture. It plays, and then when you get your power up, it does the Hawkman's theme from Flash Gordon.
How did they get the permission to play those songs?
They didn't.
Okay.
And the funny thing is that, you know, the Star Trek the Motion Picture theme wasn't really, you know, it was a great theme, but it really didn't become really, really popular until the TV show came out 7 years afterwards.
Okay.
So it's just hilarious, you know, when you start Vanguard, it goes do. And, of course, when, you know, when you do the power-up, I keep on expecting to hear Voltan scream, DIVE! Here's the thing. I have MAME, and I have, like, 300 arcade games on it. And I still play some of these games a lot. Pepper 2, okay. Getting back to Pepper 2. There are 4 mazes per level in Pepper 2. Each maze has exits leading to 3 other mazes. All 4 mazes must be filled to advance to the next level. And what they mean is that when you go to the edge of the screen, it actually scrolls to that side. So it's actually, you know, there are 4 mazes. If you go up, you go up, you know, and all that stuff. To fill in a maze, the player maneuvers Pepper around different segments of a maze. It's sort of like a zipper, you know. Once he closes or zips a segment, it fills it in, points are awarded. If Pepper backtracks on an uncompleted segment, it unzips. So basically, it's basically a mix between Pac-Man and Kix.
Kix, I haven't heard of Pac-Man, obviously.
QIX, Kix. It's, you never heard of Kix? It's the game in which you have that fractal line going around, and you have to make boxes.
I thought that was Worms or...
No. You're thinking of Snake, in which you're a snake, and it keeps on extending, and you know, you have to avoid eating your own tail. No. Kix is something different. Kix is very trippy, too. You know, if you ever just do a YouTube of kicks, and it, you know, it's still a fun game. It's still really fun because it's very elemental. Anyways, the character Pepper is an angel. There are two types of enemies that must be avoided: roaming eyes and the whippersnapper, who unzips all uncompleted zip segments by moving over them. The Pepper's one defense is to enclose an area containing a pitchfork, Energizer, which turns him into a devil for approximately 4 seconds. Yes, we have an angel becoming a devil, and becomes an angel again. There are four pitchforks on all the corners in every maze. A deluxe Energizer is located in the center of each maze. This Energizer alternates between being a pitchfork and a halo symbol. If Pepper glows the middle area when the Energizer is a halo, the whippersnapper will disappear from the maze. Points are made for enclosing a segment, as before, and consuming a pair of eyes when the energized by a pitchfork is obtaining, you know, you get points for that. And, you know, you have bonus turns, or you get bonus angels, I guess, at 40,000, 50,000, 70,000, and 90,000, or 90,000, depending on what the arcade manager put the dip switch at. Dip switches are fun. Each maze also contains a prize in one of the segments. The player must enclose the area to gain the prize in points, and when the prize is shown beneath the maze, which is basically like Pac-Man eating a fruit. Although I will not call a pretzel a fruit, I will not call a key a fruit. You know, I will not call a bell a fruit. Those are not fruits.
No, they're not.
Pepper 2 was ported to the ColecoVision home system, where it was extremely popular. Coleco had a really good eye for taking arcade games that weren't super popular and putting them on the console where they became really popular. Cosmic Avenger, Venture, this game, Ladybug, you know.
ColecoVision. I think I played Adventure. Is that where you
Venture.
Fought like three dragons and you had a maze, you had to get a bridge, go over the walls, get the grail?
No, well, you play Winky, who's a circle with a bow and arrow. And okay. Everything is deadly. The walls are deadly. No, Adventure is what you're thinking of.
Yeah,
that was a 2600 game. No, Venture, was you played Winky, and the worst part was that if you shot a creature, its corpse was deadly, and it only disintegrated dot by dot by dot. And
wow.
If it took too long in the room, the wall monsters would come in, and they would ignore the walls, and they would just come right at you, and they would kill you on the spot. So you had to be really careful, not only of not letting the monsters touch you, but also be careful where you actually shot the monsters. Because that was, you know, Venture is a really fun, yet if a little frustrating game. I loved
right.
it. Everybody thought it was too cute. I slapped him across the face for calling it cute, because I did not think it was cute. But it was a smiley face with a bow and arrow, so it was cute.
Yeah, the smiley face was cute, but the difficulty sounds brutal.
I mean, it was. I could only make it as far as I consider myself lucky if I made it to the third stage. And the thing is that each of the monsters changed as you went along. Again, YouTube Venture, Venture, not Adventure. You know, with Adventure, I used to jiggle the cartridge a bit so that it would start to glitch. And what would happen is that when the dragon ate me, I could jiggle it, and then I would walk around, and the dragon would be dragged along with me while I was in its stomach.
Yes, I've done that, too. It's such a weird effect.
You know? Or it's even funnier. Oh, God. The most irritating part of that game is the bat comes along, he takes the key, and drops off a dragon in exchange. Hello!
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I spent so many hours playing that game. Guess where I got my love of fantasy games was playing that game.
Well, if you played that game, did you ever play Haunted House?
I think so, yeah.
Haunted House is a much better version of Adventure, I think. Because you were a pair of eyes walking
yes.
around a dark thing. You know, we're doing a whole bunch of gaming flashbacks at once.
Yeah, it should be episode.
No. But, yeah, Haunted House is actually remade. I haven't played the remake. But yeah, Haunted House, I think, was the best of that type of game on the Atari 2600. It was the most challenging if you played it on the hardest level, which was that you couldn't see anything. You had to get a match or something, or a flashlight or a torch or something like that to even light up a little bit of and everything was randomized. So, yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. I believe this is you.
Okay. China ending restrictions on gaming console sales from PC Magazine. China is set to end a long-standing ban on video game consoles, or at least annoyingly restrictions related to their sale within the country. According to the Wall Street Journal, gamers in China will soon be able to buy any video game console they want from wherever they want. That includes both consoles from foreign and domestic manufacturers. Though China has previously lifted a ban on console sales, there was still plenty of red tape involved. Manufacturers had to sell and produce consoles within the Shanghai's free trade zone in order to then be able to sell these consoles across China in general, and the Chinese government still had to approve games themselves before they could be sold. The last bit is unlikely to go away anytime soon, though lifting the bureaucracy surrounding console sales themselves should give manufacturers like Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft a bit more inspiration to crack the 22 billion Chinese gaming market. Though Xbox One and PlayStation 4 have already debuted in China, sales have not quite as eye-opening as either Microsoft or Sony likely hoping for. Only 5,500,000 or so of both consoles in total are expected to sell in China this year, likely due to high price of said consoles and dearth of top games to play on them. In fact, Microsoft possibly realized when it dropped the price of its Xbox One console in China and Japan earlier in May. Additionally, the Chinese gaming market is much, much more focused on PC gaming and mobile gaming, so it remains to be seen just how many gaming consoles, even with reduced selling restrictions, will be able to make a dent.
The problem with selling consoles or even PC games in China is that piracy is not only rampant, but it's also encouraged by the government. So you always have the Chinese knockoffs of the Xbox and the PlayStation. You know.
So, yeah. I remember that old joke about Chinese knockoff or Japanese knockoff, and it's like ridiculous. I don't know.
But the thing is that we here in the United States do the same thing with food, so mm-hmm. It's no big deal. The only thing if you see anywhere in the United States Kobe beef, it's not Kobe beef. We just say it. It's an outright lie.
Like Matt, saying gluten-free. It's not really.
Everything is a lie except for wines. Because here's the thing. If sparkling wine was ever sold as champagne in any liquor store, there would be lines outside the boycotting. You can't say you're champagne without being from Champagne. You can't say you're Burgundy without being from Burgundy. You can't say you're Bordeaux without being from Bordeaux. They are hard line about it in the United States. That's the only thing, however. All other foods, lies, outright lies. And we have refused to sign the agreement saying, you know, that other countries have, that we would not lie about what the food is. You know, can't call it Kobe beef, but we call it Kobe beef because screw you, we can. We're going to call it Kobe beef, even though it's not. And you can't clone them either. That's the other thing they say. Well, we have these from offspring of Kobe. Nope, doesn't work that way. Anyways, back to this. China is considered the Holy Grail because not the adventure grail, the actual Holy Grail.
Right.
Like, because in movies, you know, a lot of our movies are so affected by China now. Because people will go see movies in China. That's why the Transformers can do nothing. It can do box office crap here. Doesn't matter. It's getting its box office over in China. They can't do the same thing here in China with digital media. Say, and also in Russia. Forget it, you know. I mean, they can try. The only way they can really do it is if China puts its foot down and says, okay, these are the official state consoles. You can only buy these, and that's it. Or we'll throw you in a gulag or something.
Well, I think they have something else other than gulag, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, gulag is Russian. I get that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think they have,
no, they'll send you to work at Foxconn.
Yeah, something like that. I guess it's a start at least. You know, it's a low sales out there. I can see, and I guess that's because of piracy.
You know. I'm not going to shed a tear that the Xbox One or PlayStation 4 are not selling in China. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink, you know. And
right.
if they don't care, you know, or if they want to, well, I think the main problem is that, I don't care about that either. I mean, I don't want the console equivalent of Gold Farmers on Xbox Live and PlayStation Network.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't need anybody doing more scams than they already are, saying.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Yeah. So, we're going to move on to the next item. Capcom is sorry about Street Fighter... Capcom is sorry about the Street Fighter 5 beta, and this comes to us from Destructoid. The first Street Fighter V beta didn't go over so well. Despite Capcom's best efforts, error messages were a frequent sight among participants. Players struggled to get into matches all weekend. Quote, after 3 days of testing, while we were making progress and collecting valuable data, we felt the majority of players were not having a good experience, and the best course of action were to take the servers offline for an extended maintenance, said Capcom. We will be postponing our first beta phase until we believe the experience is going to be a positive one for players. While specifics aren't finalized yet, the company plans to host at least 3 full beta tests prior to the game's launch in March 2016. This weekend's failed experiment will quote unquote not count toward our previously announced beta test allotments. Capcom says it'll also be putting together a quote unquote worthwhile in-game incentive for folks who manage to take part in this first test. It'll be available in North American, European, and Asian players, quote, as all territories were inconvenienced, quote unquote, by the server issues. To all the players who participated and supported us through this initial phase, we cannot thank you enough. We understand how frustrating it is to be so close to playing the game you were excited for and to have it not working. The whole team is very disappointed that we were unable to deliver a proper beta experience this time. Thank you for our continued support, and we promise we'll have a much better experience for you with future betas. So,
it's amazing how often they just keep having server issues. I mean, you think they'd be able to afford to have proper server network set up so people can play the beta.
You know, for a long while, they thought that you could never be precise with a fighting game online. And then a couple of fans decided, you know what, we're going to show you. And they created some sort of middleware, which made it possible to have online, you know, fighting without any lag. So it is possible. It's just not everybody's able to do it. I have never been a Street Fighter guy. I've actually been more of a Dead or Alive than a Soul Calibur sort of person. You know, Street Fighter. See, the problem with Street Fighter is that it's not very accessible to me. It's too technical, and I think that's because it's grown up as the competition fighter. You know, I mean, the professional fighters know each character to the pixel. If there's a couple of pixels moved, they will know about it, and they will adjust their strategies to it. That is hardcore.
I thought there was another game.
Not Virtual Fighter.
Virtual Fighter, or maybe... I've heard a lot of games being used, not just Street Fighter, but...
There are some minor games... Oh, shoot, what is the name of that? Skullgirls? I don't know if it's a professional one, though. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, and I don't care. But really, Super Smash Bros. Just makes me want to gag. I mean, I don't care how technical you think it is, it's a button masher. You press A over and over and over and over and over again until someone gets tired, faints, or flies off the screen. That's it.
It makes me really, I think Virtual Fighter was right. Yeah, that was the game I was thinking of. But the Smash Brothers, it just seems so over the top. And I guess younger audiences like that. They like the big beams of power. And
yeah, but Nintendo had a competition, a Smash Brothers Melee competition. You know, a professional. And it's like, that's a professional game? Really? I mean, I don't care about cutesy graphics. It's just a game played just as like, oh... Luck.
I remember you guys, I think, did a flashback of Bushido Blade. I think that's the game I'm thinking of, where you are just like, you have these swords, and it's like martial arts with the swords, and if you kill each other like in within like a second. And I like those kind of games as far as fighters are concerned.
Oh, then you must really be getting into be excited for Life is Futile.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's a medieval, what's it called, combat game, which is a lot of swords. Occasionally some bows and arrows, but the thing is the bows and arrows are almost completely useless. If you don't hit them, they'll just come up and decapitate you, because archers really can't do anything. And they have catapults and all that stuff. You know, so maybe you might get into Life is Futile, and there's actually a non-MMO version of it.
Really trying to avoid MMOs.
I forgot what the name of it is, but it's where you're storming the castle. You know, have fun.
Have fun storming the castle. You think it'll work? It'll take a miracle.
Yeah. So, getting back to Street Fighter V, I've never really been into Street Fighter V. I mean, I know it's very popular. And so what's even more motivating for me not to care is that it's not going to be on the Xbox One. So why would I, you know, if I don't own it, if I don't own a PS, I know it's going to be on PC, which is, you know, which is basically, you know, sort of like saying, well, if you don't have a, if you own an Xbox One but not a PS4, just play it on PC. But I just don't care, and I'm going to get hate mail for that. I'm gonna get hate mail for Super Smash. And I'm gonna get hate mail for Street Fighter V.
They can send me hate mail too. I'm bored of fighter games. They just I get bored of them very quickly, even quicker than shoot 'em up games. So it's yeah, I understand.
Something must be up because Xbox Live was wonky last night, and there was not getting not basic services, but the tier just above basic. You know, and I don't know what was going on. I wasn't able to access YouTube or anything like that. I cannot believe I play YouTube most on my Xbox One. That's my number one game right now, aside from TV. It's YouTube. And I never thought that I would rather watch YouTube on a console than I would from the PC, but I do. Simply because, A, I have a TV screen, and, you know, YouTube's really getting better, and I have a 4K television as well. But, you know, here's the problem. The Science Channel... it's the How It's Made channel. I don't care about How It's Made anymore. It was fine when it was like a 1 hour block in the morning. I said, oh, I'll watch this. But now it is literally 18 hours of the 24 hours of the Science Channel.
Well, at least they're still doing science, unlike History Channel.
Industrial arts, I don't consider that much science, you know? I mean, I'm mostly into astronomy. Where's my astronomy? Where's this? You know, I mean, they briefly had how the universe works New Horizons was going to Pluto, but now they have 18-hour blocks of How It's Made, and then 2-hour blocks of factory stuff, and 2-hour blocks of, you know, and it's like, what is this? Is not the manufacturing channel. This is the science channel. It's only, I guess it's more reasonable than, say, well, Duck Dynasty science, on history.
Part of science is knowing how things work and how they've been put together. And
yeah, I mean, that's industrial. That's industrial science. Thank you. Where's the theoretical science? I want theoretical science. You know, at least it's slightly related, unlike Duck Dynasty and Iceman. Oh. And here's the thing about it. You know that History Channel had to change its logo. Its motto to history is made every day to justify having stuff that's not history on the History Channel.
Yeah, and Sci-Fi Channel with wrestling, because wrestling is sci-fi. But I have a TV hooked up to my computer, actually. So, I mean, it's not even one of those expensive fancy TVs. It just has HDMI connection, so I can watch YouTube.
I need to get a TV out so I can start putting videos on VHS and sending those out. It's the only way to do a VHS now, to record from put my files onto VHS, because I want to send it to Red Letter Media and have them be on the wheel of the worst. But the thing is that at least H2, History 2, was supposed to do everything that history was. And now all it does is aliens and government conspiracies and all these tinfoil hat sort of stuff. The Smithsonian Channel has to do historical stuff because it's owned by the U.S. government. Right. So at least you have that. And, you know, I just miss the days of when the History Channel was the all Hitler network.
Oh my God.
It was World War II morning, noon, and night. Everything having to do with the Nazis and the Allies and the Japanese and World War II and all that. That was all they showed.
How's Discovery Channel doing? Because at least they still have Mythbusters.
Yeah, you know, Mythbusters is still on every so often, you know, mm-hmm. But the Discovery Channel has the benefit of being connected to the BBC, because a lot of the programs the BBC shows, the Discovery Channel will also show after they edit it, you know. So, but they took off Jurassic Fight Club and all that stuff, you know. There's much fewer dinosaurs on Discovery now.
Is Jurassic Fight Club like the what was it? Deadliest Warrior. That's what it's called.
Well, actually, you know, it sort of, you know, in which you take two dinosaurs and you see how they would compete against you. The Deadliest Warriors thing, I didn't mind because at least it was factual. You know, and it actually took it very seriously. You know, it's not like playing Street Fighter V with, say, a samurai and a World War I gunner. See how I brought it all the way back to Street Fighter V? Mm-hmm. It's not a fighting game sort of thing. You know, even though actually they do have a fighting game that's based on Deadliest Warriors.
Yes, they do.
And here's the thing: is that it's also very accurate. They try to make it as accurate as possible. You know. It's not like you can do Hadouken and shoot a fireball out of their heads. Yes, I am. I am. They actually had once the CIA versus the KGB at one point, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think I saw that one.
I noticed a pattern with all of them, too. You know, what's it called? All the American sides won, and all the cooler, ones one as well, even though there's no way that a samurai would have been able to defeat a Viking warrior. No way. Well, no way in hell.
Cooler is subjective, because I thought, like, for instance, the Shaolin monk. What was it? Shaolin monk versus, like, a Maui? Not Maui. Was it Maui?
Maybe you're thinking of those New Zealand... Maori, maybe?
Yeah.
A Maori warrior? The thing is that people don't understand this, but samurai swords were awful. They broke easily because the reason why they folded the metal was because the metal was so poor that they had to fold it so that it was actually worth something, you know, could actually hold up for a few moments, you know.
But they don't mind you making it seem grand and fantastic. Increase the reputation, make our stuff even more valuable. Go ahead.
They have to sell those swords, you know.
Yeah.
They have to sell those swords. Anyway, so getting back to Street Fighter V. You know, the thing is that I wonder how much time they spent on the netcode, because if you're going to have Street Fighter V be online, you know, that's kind of important for a game like Street Fighter V.
Do people have to pay for this beta?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure the pre-orders got in immediately. So that's paying for it, sort of. The thing about this is that, from what I understand, Street Fighter V is going to have massive DLC, and I think you're actually going to have to buy fighters.
Of course.
I have to look this up. Yeah, I'm sorry, no, that's a little bit differently. You unlock it by playing the game, what's it called, the characters, but you can purchase the characters immediately. You know, you can buy them with real money. Oh, I'm sorry, with Zenny.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Whatever the script they're using.
Yeah.
So, there's 16 characters. You'll receive balancing updates for free when they appear. I would hope so. I mean, yeah, your character's broken, but if you want to fix it, you can pay for it.
Sheesh.
So, you know, that's how Microsoft did it with the rare fighting game. I can't believe. Oh, Killer Instinct. You know, Killer Instinct.
Oh yeah, with the dinosaurs.
But here's the thing. No.
I'm trying to remember.
No. The fighting game with the dinosaurs. And I remember that it wasn't only dinosaurs. It actually had
there was an ape. I remember.
There was an ape, and there was also some other stuff. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. Primal Rage. Primal Rage is the name of it.
Yeah.
It's not Primal Rage. It's Killer Instinct. Now, the thing about Killer Instinct, however, it was completely free. And it came with, like, I think either two or three or four characters. And then you could buy the characters that you wanted. And the thing about that was that if you bought all the characters, it was basically a $20 game, right? Which is normally what you would pay to have all of it. So it was basically not ripping people off. You know, this, you're paying for a full game, and you're going to have to... I wonder how fast these characters can be unlocked by themselves. That's going to be the question. Because if it gets to a point in which you would buy an entire fighter with money, it tells me that you couldn't unlock it that quickly or else they'll never make money.
I don't know. Some people are really impatient, but I know what you mean. It's like all you have to do... Well, it's like, how do you unlock them?
You get money. You get the same money that you could buy the money to buy the, you know. So you're basically earning the script to buy
the. You win bouts and stuff. You get money, and then you pay that money to buy out the next fighter that you want.
Yeah, I don't even know if you have to win. I just think you have to play. I'm not sure. I haven't kept up with Street Fighter V, but you know, like I said, you know, it's kind of cheesy to pay full price for a game and then have to wait to unlock stuff. That, I think that was one of the big problems with Evolve. You know, pre-orders got to unlock certain things immediately, while other people's had to play, and they had to go through a lot of hoops with Evolve.
Yeah,
and that was such a blown opportunity.
I'm sure some impatient people will just get it, look at all those locked characters and go, screw it, and then swipe their credit card and buy them all and not even care, because some people just don't have the patience.
I didn't even know if you could do that with Evolve, actually. I think you just had to grind through the entire thing, which is a pain in itself. You know, I would have rather they just did Left 4 Dead 3, you know, because same by the same people who did Left 4 Dead, and this Evolve did not work. The monster is too overpowered and would win almost always because it was just too overpowered. You can have an uneven match game, you know, 4-on-1, but you have to really make sure it's balanced and fun, you know. And the easiest way to do that is just have something like Left 4 Dead, in which it's everybody against the computer. The computer won't whine if you cheat. The computer won't whine if it's overmatched. You know, and in Left 4 Dead's case, it would just say, oh, you want to do that? Okay, here's two tanks at once. Enjoy!
Would you say that Capcom is good at balancing their games?
Yeah, it's their entire thing. The problem isn't balancing the game. The problem is that they're DLCing the hell out of people right now.
Yeah. I know it's been on their previous games that they've been releasing. There's this guy, Angry Joe, who's just like, oh, it was Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat was all the DLC characters that you were buying, and that's what he was pissed off about.
That's someone else, though. That's NetherRealms. The one thing that's really pissed off people, including me, is Batman Arkham Knight, in which you have to pay $40 for all the DLC. But here's the really thing. What was one of the best parts about Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Origins were the challenge maps. You know, where you had both the fighting and the predator things that you could just do a, you know, it was just a fight, you know, just practicing your skills against, you know, it would, you know, and you'd have nightmare levels as well, or you do the predator mission so you can, you know, do that for fun. It's not with the base game. Now it's going to be part of the DLC, which you have to pay for, which really annoys me, because one of the things after you finish the game, one of the things I did a lot was just do the fighting and the predator, you know, but nope, got to pay for it. And also some 40-minute single story missions, which are okay, you know. I mean, since I pre-ordered Arkham Knight, I got the Jason Todd and the Harley Quinn. And while they were both sort of interesting, they were also very short. Well, I got 50 achievement points for each of them.
Well, that does sound fun, at least. Challenge maps and playing as Harley Quinn. I know people wanted that.
Well, no, the thing is that you don't get the challenge maps, though. That's my problem, is it? You get I got the Harley Quinn as a pre-order bonus, was it the Red Knight, and also Red Hood as a GameStop pre-order bonus, and I believe the Batgirl content just came out. I'm not going to get it because I'm not going to pay money to do it. It doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I want challenge maps for free. If you give me the challenge maps for free, then I'll buy the other DLC.
That's why I don't like these games being all piecemealed out like that, because then there's going to be somebody who later on, you know, years later, might buy this game and can't get the Harley Quinn or the Red Hood or the Batgirl.
Oh, by that time, it's going to be the Batman Arkham Asylum, Arkham Knight Collector's Edition with all the DLC included. But that's going to be like a year and a half from now, and it'll be full price to justify paying for a two-year-old game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the problems with Destiny was that, according to a lot of people who were in the know, who were following it for the years that it was being developed, it was cut in half.
See, actually,
by Activision.
To go back to that early point where you were just saying how they're going to include everything there, that Sims 2 collection that you could get from Origin that was given away for free, you couldn't get all those DLCs that were store specific or whatever, or pre-order. There was like this, there was this car that I wanted. And it didn't. They didn't have it. They didn't include that. And
did you go to the store? Because some of this, not the store, but you know, some of this stuff was made by. A lot of the content was made by people. You know, by fans.
It wasn't the fan made thing. It was a pre order thing. It was a little car, and it wasn't. And when I got the Ultimate Edition Sims 2, 3 from Origin, it didn't have that little car, which was something I'd been wanting. I forgot it was called the buggy or something.
Oh.
So they don't always include that stuff. You know, it just gets left out for whatever reason.
You know, I got freebies free content, depending on what Sims 2... Well, I was offered free content depending on what Sims 2 stuff I had. Was it Sims 3? I'm not sure. Anyways, I just remember, if you had this, this, and this, you get this, this, and this. So,
right.
But, getting back to Destiny, that was actually cut in half, which is why there was no content for people when it was released. Literally. And Bungie had put a lot of stuff in it, and there's a lot of parts of the game in which it's leading up to something and then nothing happens. That's where content was removed, you know.
That's unfortunate. Very. So
I'm just saying, you know, we're getting to the point at which we're doing what a lot of people had feared, like 5 years ago. Are you paying for an entire game, or are you paying for half a game and then paying $40 to complete what should have been the full game?
Yeah, you definitely feel like there's some abuse happening there, getting milked more than, you know, you originally would pay for these games. You pay like, you know, yeah, it's like people are upset about Beyond Earth being like, I think, $30, and they wanted it to be cheaper, like $15 or something, and they feel like they're paying full price for a full price game but getting only an expansion pack.
No, I mean, Beyond Earth. Are you talking about the little ship game?
Rising Tide. The expansion for Beyond Earth is Rising Tide. That's what they're upset about. I'm sorry.
Is it out yet?
Not yet.
Well, here's the thing, you know, I mean, the expansions, Gods and Kings and, I forgot the second one. Gods and Kings and...
Brave New World.
Yeah, Brave New World, you know, didn't have that much content. I mean, but it had enough that it felt, you know, huge. I mean, see, there's ways to change the game, and what those two expansions did was basically add gameplay mechanics, which... Here's the thing, is that I really did not like Civilization V when it came out. Did not like it at all. I mean, I liked the one unit per space thing, which changed the game radically. Because one thing I hated was the Killer Stacks of Doom. You know, not only because they were Killer Stacks of Doom, but also you had to wait as these 50 tanks attacked, and you had to wait as each tank attacked. Tank, tank, tank. Tank. Okay, that was the 150 stack, dude. Here comes the other 50 tank stack of doom coming to attack you. It just took too long, right?
You could turn off the animation where they just all attack at once and you don't see all that one at a time. They'll just mass attack and,
yeah, but still, I mean, it was still kind of ridiculous. Anyway, and, you know, God to Kings, what's it called, livened up the game a bit, you know, and then Brave New World just kicked it in the pants, you know, especially, and it was just even like the small things, like the archaeology thing, totally, who cares, you know, but it added that little something, like, the game was recognizing what you did earlier in the game, you know, oh, I remember that battle, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you had to think,
you know what, after this battle, I wonder if there's going to be a lot of culture being generated by this spot later on. Anyways, but, you know, you don't have to do a lot to make a game bigger, you know. It just requires, you know, something that fundamentally changes it. Just adding fighters, you know, piecemeal, or, you know, in the case of Destiny, you know, these missions, and they're all the same missions because the game has been shrunken. It just kills it, you know. I don't want to get it. We're speaking in circles now, but, you know. This will be a topic later on in the podcast. We're going to move on to the next item. Video game organization to start testing gamers for drugs, and this comes to us from IBN Live. A competitive video game organization will begin testing players for performance-enhancing drugs next month as the field of so-called esports moves further in into the mainstream and prize pools climb. The announcement by the Electronic Sports League came just weeks after one gamer admitted to using the stimulant Adderall at a tournament, sparking discussion around an issue that has long plagued traditional sports. The ESL said it will partner with the World Anti-Doping Agency. And by the way, the World Anti-Doping Agency, yes, it's the same people who monitors the Olympics. Okay? Olympics and all the other major So this is a very large organization. And Germany's anti-doping agency to develop a policy on the issue and aims to perform tests on all of its major events once the policy is established. Do you have to leave for a moment? The ESL said in a statement on Thursday it would start administering randomized skin tests for drugs at its ESL One Cologne event in Germany in August, a tournament for the first-person shooting game Counter-Strike Global Offensive that boasts a 250,000 prize pool, $250,000. The ESL said it will partner with we already said that. The ESL said it has long banned players from using drugs or alcohol at its events, like many other organizations, but it'll be the first to test its cyber athletes. Earlier this month, Corey Friesen, who now plays Counter-Strike for Team Nihilum Gaming, spoke about his performance with a former team at a recent $250,000 tournament. In the video interview with another gamer, Friesen said the hectic nature of their communications had been due to his entire five-man team taking Adderall. According to him, he said, the ESL comms were kind of funny. I didn't even care. We were all on Adderall. Tons of people do it. The ESL is one of the world's largest sport gaming organizations with more than 5 million registered league participants. According to its website, it hosts tournaments for many of the competitive gaming's top titles. For those of you who don't know what Adderall is, it is basically an amphetamine that basically is like crunk. You just go into hyperdrive.
It was talking about increasing your heart rate, which is, which can lead to heart failure and a couple other side effects, including
sudden death. Do not use this if you have a high blood pressure.
Yes.
I don't know why you would ever want to play. Actually, see, they should allow people to be drunk when playing, because at least that'll impair their ability to play.
That would be hilarious.
Actually, they should have a special tournament with only drunk players, and they have to have an alcohol level of at least 0.2 in their system, just to see how they play. They can't crash their cash at anybody in a car. What's the worst that would happen? They hurt their hand punching the monitor.
That sounds like a lot of our Civ Turncast games. Half of us are drunk when we're playing Civ.
No, Adderall is also very noticed by the World Anti-Doping Agency because it's also a masking agent for steroids. Although I doubt people would use steroids for video gaming. Those are muscles that are not required. I don't think.
I'm not even sure Adderall would really enhance gameplay. They would be all nervous and jittery, which could be a negative too.
I mean, it could focus people, and I could picture people playing StarCraft 2 using Adderall, because they play at such a speed. I mean, they see StarCraft and StarCraft 2 actually have special high speeds that are like rates. Like 25 times faster, because the matches in Korea are that fast. I could just picture Adderall being a very useful drug there.
I don't know, I just thought caffeine pretty much does the same thing. Makes you all hyper. It makes me hyper anyways. I don't even want to think about taking that crap.
I was thinking maybe they were taking Midol or something. the thing is that, it's interesting that the parallels, they're trying to make a lot more parallels between esports and regular sports. I remember that Colin Cowherd was really trashing esports when it aired on ESPN. He just went off on it, saying it's not a real sport, and he would, if he found out, if they aired it once again, he would quit. And of course he has quit, by the way. And also, he sort of screwed up his own chances of getting hired by Fox with some very questionable things. I don't know if any... Do you follow regular old sports?
Nope. I don't follow any sports, sorry.
Okay, well, he basically said that them Latinos weren't the smartest people in the world,
Oh, he must be Republican.
I don't know what a party affiliation he is, but he's a chode. He's a contrarian. Anything that's any popular ideal, he'll go immediately to the other side of, just because. So he's basically a 40-year-old hipster, or 51-year-old hipster. So, yeah, I mean, Anyways, so getting back to esports, it seems like, I don't know if it's being a forced comparison to regular sports, but it seems like they're really trying to get esports to get the same recognition as physical sports. You know? Although, you know, yeah. Technically, chess is a sport. They do call chess a sport. And so is spelling, which is on ESPN all the time.
I didn't know if that would be a sport, but more of a competition, but okay.
But spelling is a sport, yes. And so is chess. They also have chess boxing. You ever heard of that? In which you play some chess, then you box, and then you play some chess again.
Never heard of that.
Look it up, chess boxing. Yeah, that'll, what's it called? It's kind of hard to play chess when you're suffering a concussion, so, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, chess boxing is a thing. So, what do you think?
Well, I think I pretty much said it before, we're taking these enhancement drugs that have these severe side effects just for a little increased speed. It just seems really stupid, but, you know, that's people doing that anyways.
Do you ever watch esports on Twitch?
No, I haven't watched that, no.
What was really entertaining was I was watching someone play the Pokemons on Twitch, which was really funny. It was a Pokemon tournament, and in fact. And I was actually getting into it, you know. A guy actually had... really lucky, had the two other, both of his opponents faint on a very high, low percentage attack. And, you know, it's like everybody was going, ooh, ah, you know. But yeah, I was watching Pokemon on Twitch, and, you know, it's funny. You can have esports in the background while you're doing other stuff.
Yeah, lots of stuff in the background now with computers, multitasking, having a whole bunch of tabs open. Yeah.
So we're going to move on to the next item, and this one you might care about, a little bit more about.
Not even a shitload of Fallout 4 Pip-Boy editions is enough for the world, from GamesRadar. The special Pip-Boy edition of Fallout 4, which combines with your smartphone to form a functional representation of Siri's famous post-apocalyptic wrist computer, is undoubtedly going to be worth its weight in bottle caps when the game launches on November 10th. Partly because it's awesome, yes, but also because Bethesda simply can't make any more. They've been ordered and manufactured to capacity. Have you heard about how somebody actually bought a game with bottle caps? That was hilarious.
Mm.
They bought like 2,000 or somewhere over 2,000 bottle caps.
I thought you maybe had one of those that you won $10,000 on the spot.
Yeah. We've reached a point where we go back to the factories and they're like, guys, this is it. I'm sorry. This is as long as we can run the lines, and as many of them as we can make. Bethesda VP Pete Hines told GameSpot at QuakeCon over the weekend.
Shit. Wait, QuakeCon was this weekend? Really?
Yeah.
Huh. You know, the funny thing is that, you know, I never really liked Quake anyway, you know, but still, it was supposed to be a major event. Now it's like, oh yeah, QuakeCon was this weekend. Oh, really? Sort of like, BlizzCon at least still has
hype.
Yeah, it has some hype. I mean, the BlizzCon tickets sell out in, like, less than an hour.
Oh, MineCon sold out in, like, 3 fucking seconds, I swear. Like,
but the problem with MineCon is that it was in
London.
In London, yeah, so...
Last year, when it was in Orlando and I tried to get tickets, it was like, okay, they're available, and poof, they're not available, they're sold out! It was ridiculous!
Well, what's it called? Maybe the tickets were written by J.K. Rowling or something, and that's why they sold so fast.
Apparently, they're sold in gold, and then just.
But I did ridiculous. Watch. I did watch MineCon on Xbox. Xbox was holding the live stream of, and it was sort of interesting. I don't know if you would have missed anything. Maybe. Well, it depends on what else there was to do there. You know, but the events they were covering. There was a lot of panels, and there were a lot of children there. There were a lot of 6, 7, 8-year-olds, you know, at MineCon this year.
Yes, there were. I think there is. Well,
That could have been why it sold so fast, is that people were buying these family things, you know, two parents and two kids.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, buying in bulk a lot of them. And I know that they had issues with trying to keep people from reselling tickets because they made the tickets assigned to a person. So even if you didn't want to go, you tried to sell it, it was assigned to you. It would have your name on it, and then nobody else could use that ticket.
Wow.
So,
That's what the NFL was doing with the Super Bowl tickets. They're trying to combat StubHub. Anyways.
But finishing up the Pip-Boy article, basically, you only did a few thousand? No, we did a ton of these things. I think we did more of these things than we did for any collector's edition we've ever done, ever. And the last bit of this is, so hold on to your fancy toys, Hulk Thrillers, who successfully pre-ordered the 120 special edition. You've got something special on your arms.
Did you sold out,
and now it's going to be a major collector's edition.
Did you pre-order?
No, I didn't.
I could have. And by the way, I was at the Bethesda thing, so I could have done it right there when they announced it. But I didn't, because here's the thing, is that it's still going to work with your smartphone. You're just not going to have a plastic overlay that makes it look like a Pip-Boy. And I'm thinking, you know what you could do, really, Bethesda, is you could sell for $5 the CAD, the 3D CAD, and have people 3D laser print their Pip-Boy overlays. And, you know, they go to something like Games Workshop, and they paint it themselves.
There's a lot of ways that they could do Pip-Boys. I know I've seen some tutorials on how to make a Pip-Boy online already. Not even 3D printing, just buying the parts and I guess getting the right measurements and shaping them, and just it's crazy.
But here's the thing, folks. You know, if you don't get the Pip-Boy edition, you're not going to lose any functionality, because it's going to work normally with any smartphone. It's basically smart glass, you know, and just with Fallout 4.
I think people are better off getting a stand for their iPhone, iPad, or whatever, having it just next to the monitor, so we could just look over, do the little thing.
Well, you can always buy one of those things that people buy for jogging, you know, those straps, and just put it around their thing, and they could just pretend their smartphone is a Pip-Boy, you know. I mean, it's going to be major bragging rights. I remember when I was able to buy a Diablo 3 Collector's Edition that someone wasn't able to buy, and I sold it for $184 from its normal $180 price. And in hindsight, I should have kept it. I shouldn't have sold it. Because it also had the soundtrack, what's called, included, and that's something I valued. But I was going for the money, and, you know, I should have said... And because the other thing is, I already bought Diablo 2 as well. So
I regret getting rid of things like that, like my Legos.
Well, I still have my giant Master Chief head from the Halo 3 Legendary Edition.
Wow, cool.
And I did buy the Halo 5 Legendary Edition for $250, because I am a total tool. I am a 100% tool. I mean, I bought this thing. I don't regret paying for it either. I don't even know what's coming with it. That's the part that makes me a real tool. I don't know what's coming with the $250 version of Halo 5. All I know is that there are certain games I will pay for the maximum amount for, and this is one of them. Which is also why I pre-ordered the 3D, the Blu-ray, the DVD, and the digital copy of Mad Max Fury Road, which is coming out on September 1st, because I really, really, really want it, and I'm probably going to see it a lot. And I don't have 3D now. I have a 4K TV, so I think it can do 3D if I wanted it to. But if I ever needed 3D in the future, well, I have the 3D version as well. Because I will say this, you know... Mad Max Fury Road is the best movie I've seen in a very long time.
Oh, I'm glad it was a good movie.
Yeah. You're not a fan of post-apocalyptic cars?
No. I haven't seen the movies. I just never gotten around.
Go see it before it leaves theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the thing is that one thing that's really benefiting from the movie is Mad Max the Game, which is basically a Red Dead Redemption with cars. Which is not a bad thing.
Sounds good to me.
Yep. So anyways, the question of the week is related to what we were discussing earlier, and that is, what makes a good expansion? And I already went into a lot about the two Civ 5 expansions. How about you? I guess my answer was that it expands gameplay, even if it doesn't add a whole lot.
I do want expanded gameplay, but I guess also I want it to feel like it's not something that was missing in the first place that should have been in vanilla. You know, I want it to be something that, like Fantastic Worlds in Civ 2, where you could have a a dinosaur scenario, and there was I think a
oh, they had the Master of Magic one that I played, the one that turned Master of Magic, which basically is Civilization combined with Magic the Gathering in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that.
But here's the thing: is that you have to be careful with that, because a lot of expansions are made in conjunction with the game that are intended to be expansions that are never intended to be. See, there's the slippery slope, because a lot of great expansions are ones that are started, you know, with the idea, you know, we made this, and you know what would be really, really cool is if this happened. So they start making the expansion while the game is being developed, you know, but it was never intended to be part of the game, you know, and they never started making it with the intention of making more money. They just said, you know, this would be a cool addition. And I think there was one game which, I mean, some of the DLC for Arkham City was like that. It was never, you know, but then, you know, it got into, oh, I'll give you a good example, is the Beyond From the Ashes DLC for Mass Effect 3, which basically gave you Javik, right, the Prothean. It was intended to be DLC, but it was never going to be that you felt something was missing if it wasn't there, right?
Right.
Because you still found Javik, he just wasn't a party member, and he couldn't go with you. He just stayed in the ship. It's like, I'll just stay over here while you do this other stuff, you know. Fortunately, also, the From Ashes was a DLC bonus as well. I mean, a pre-order bonus, and a lot of people didn't miss it. The best... You know what? I'm going to go back to Heroes of Might and Magic, the series. Heroes of Might and Magic 2 had The Price of Loyalty, was an expansion, but it was released later on. It was never intended, you know, to be made at all. But then when you came around to Heroes of Might and Magic 4... A lot of the DLC for Might and Magic 4 felt slight. It felt like we're just going to do a minimum of effort and add a new faction. And it could have been something they were intending, but they never felt like they were worth the money. It was sort of like going through the motions. So you have that part as well, in which people release DLC that is just basically, eh. Anybody could have this could have been a fan expansion, and that you couldn't tell the difference.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. And there are some games that really obviate the need for an expansion, like Skyrim. You don't hear much about expansions for that, do you? Because yeah, everybody's making expansions for it. It makes its own expansions.
There have been some very impressive expansions made for, you know, by the fans, and it amazes me what people can do in their own spare time.
Yeah, like recreating Morrowind in its entirety.
Yeah. There's Morrowind, and there's Skywind that people are making, and then there's Oblivion. There's another one for Oblivion,
right?
Skyrim graphics. It's crazy.
I mean, you know, there was one who recreated the entire continent of Morrowind before all of this. You know, right down to nitty gritty, and you know, people were, and then someone did they ever make Daggerfall? No. No, I don't think so.
Daggerfall, that's the first game.
I know. That would be impressive. If someone recreated Daggerfall, that'd be time and a half. Well, Daggerfall cheated, though. I mean, Daggerfall, a lot of the terrain was just randomly generated as you walked along, you know.
Yeah.
But, so we're going to ask the people out there, and hopefully having an actual question of the week will make people answer. What makes a good expansion? You know, when you buy it, do you think you didn't get ripped off?
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, here's a question for those people out there. Was Halo 3 ODST, was that a ripoff? Because it just forced people to rebuy the maps again for $60 along with the $30 content? Or was the game itself worth it, you know? You know, like, what makes a good expansion is extremely personal. Let me ask you a question. What was the best DLC that you ever played? I mean, not DLC, but expansion. I must say expansion, not DLC, because there's a difference between the two. Although that difference is getting blurred every day. So what was
For me, it would be the Throne of Baal for Baldur's Gate 2, because They threw in the Watcher's Keep. They have a whole entire campaign after that really concludes the whole game as a trilogy, or, you know, makes it feel.
Well, Baldur's Gate 1 had a huge expansion as well. The Serpent's no, that was Ultima.
Tales of the Sword Coast.
Tales of the Sword Coast, right. I mean, it wasn't as big as Throne of Baal. And I remember that because that same year, Diablo II had its own major expansion. And it was actually very close. It also dealt with Baal. You know, it had its own Baal. And it actually was the co-winner of Expansion of the Year with Baldur's Gate 2 for that year, for 2000. So yeah, I mean, yeah, but yeah, Throne of Baal was really huge. It was really huge.
Well, that's my favorite one then.
Yeah.
I feel like it really expanded the game and again, gave you a satisfying conclusion to the series.
You know, I started Baldur's Gate and I couldn't complete it because it was too huge for me at the time. Now that I know the kill everything cheat code, I'll just run through
That's just cheesing.
If God intended me to have to play the entire game based on what the developer wanted, he wouldn't have invented a cheat code. Okay? Cheat code is the way of me saying, sorry, you screwed up here. For example, I go into God mode when I get into the Zen portion of Half-Life, of the original Half-Life, because I am not in the mood for Zen when I play Half-Life. Sorry. That was too difficult. It was just too boring and difficult. See, I don't mind something being difficult, but it can't be boring, too.
What was the Zen?
Zen was that place when you go in, and it's just this weird alien world. And the monsters there are just... it was just annoying as hell. You know, so that's what... I never needed to use a cheat code for Half-Life 2. So, you see, there they learned their lesson. Although, the problem with Half-Life 2 is that it's dull. I mean, here's the problem with that, is that the Source Engine was all shiny and new, and they wanted to show you how many physics puzzles there you could do with it. The problem is that physics puzzles are boring! They might not be boring when you first encounter them, you know, when physics puzzles are new. But now physics puzzles are just the drum solos of video games. Like, okay, yeah, here, you have to put this so that this rises up. Okay, we get it. Physics puzzles are now when developers run out of ideas. And say, oh, we'll just put a physics puzzle here. Unless you're BioWare, then you do the Towers of Hanoi. You know the Towers of Hanoi, right?
No.
Oh, the tower. You've probably seen them. It's when you have these two, you have these three things, these three poles, and two sides have, one side has all these discs on them, and you're supposed to get the discs over to the other side.
Yeah.
That's Towers of Hanoi.
Okay, yes. I didn't know it was called that, but yeah, now I know what you mean.
Well, that's why it appears in almost every BioWare game.
Oh, I see. Okay. Is that what
just,
you mean
just
by,
be grateful it didn't appear in Baldur's Gate. Oh, wait. Was it BioWare then or Black Isle?
Black Isle.
Right. Here's a question. If you liked Baldur's Gate, did you enjoy Icewind Dale?
Yes. I played both of those, and I enjoyed them.
And Icewind Dale had some nice expansions, too. Not as hyped, but
yeah.
Still.
Heart of Winter and the War Master or something like that.
Yeah, I go further back than you. I was more of the SSI's AD&D gold box games.
I played those, too. I played those as well.
Okay.
I played the Silver Blade.
Curse of the Azure Bond.
Yep.
And,
Azure Bond.
Played Pool of Radiance, Curse of the Azure Bonds. I forgot the third one, and then it was Pools of Darkness. Yeah, the first one, Pools of Radiance, you had to wait forever for those monsters to move.
Yeah, I read the books of each of those games, so that was an interesting experience.
Oh, yeah, the books. Also, you know, I don't care what anybody says, but I really liked Hillsfar. I don't know why it got so much hate, Hillsfar. I mean, an action sequence when you were riding a horse.
Yeah, I also played the Trin games as well for the SSI. I always loved getting into detail on those little characters, making different graphics and colors, and I thought that was a lot of fun. But that was back before I really knew how to play D&D, so I was making everything like triple class. So like, oh yeah, I got a fighter, mage, a cleric.
But now that's standard for D&D. I mean, with Wizards of the Coast, oh, you can make yourself a halfling, fighter, mage, orc, thief, threat, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, and it won't affect you. No. You can go
powerful.
Dual class if you want, you know. I admire anybody who makes a human fighter.
Yeah, just straight up Human Fighter.
Yep, just beat their brains in. Mm-hmm. You know the old saying. You know, linear fighters and quadratic wizards.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, what makes a good expansion? That is the question of the week. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net, or subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. We can follow Jonah, Paul, and Scott at Jonah Falcon, at Stager Monkey, and at Alpha Shard. So, yeah. So this was our... and Dan just messaged me saying that he didn't feel he had anything substantive to contribute. Well, you know, we were talking a lot about expansions. Maybe he can talk about his favorite expansion, you know. And I wonder if it involves Gods and Kings and the Brave New World.
Maybe, I don't know. He might surprise you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, does Minecraft have expansions?
Minecraft doesn't, but there are other games. He plays, I know he plays racing games. Mm.
I wonder what he thinks of Minecraft Tales.
I don't know.
You know, when Telltale makes a Minecraft game.
I'm interested in that story game to see how it does, and if it's a good story, I hope it is.
Yeah. Anyway, so we will see you next week, and hopefully Paul will be with us.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely, yeah. All right, get well, Paul. See you guys later. Bye.
Bye-bye.